2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, 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 hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis, and with us, special guest this morning, Sheridan Hanson. Sheridan, thanks for joining us on this holiday weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm not hearing you. I'm going to have Dave work on your mic for
we
just
invited her, but apparently she can't talk. She can just
she
sit
can
here.
Talk. How many videos have we done with Sheridan? And her expertise has been wonderful.
Yes.
So Sheridan, give us a second to work out your mic problems. Speak to us. Let's see if your mic's working now.
Can you hear me?
No, I can't. Across the room, not good enough. This morning, we're going to start out with the plan of the week, though. Well, maybe let's start out and talk about Sheridan for just a second so people know who she is. Since we can't ever get Ton to take a day off, he just loves being with us so much. So Sheridan Hanson is a horticulturist with the Extension Service, USU Extension Service.
She
now tell us her specialties.
She is a horticulturist at the USU Botanical Center in Kaysville, and her specialties are legion. How's that?
Legion. Wow.
Vegetables.
She's like, and I can't speak
cold
yet.
Frames.
She's laughing at you.
You name it, she's done it. And
we do have a bunch of videos, well, at least one that we've done recently with Sheridan, where you can see the cold frames and how to extend your gardening season. So we hope you'll check that out.
Yes.
Facebook page, KSL
okay,
Greenhouse
try it now.
Facebook page. Now?
All right. Can you hear me?
Here you are. Now you can laugh, Sheridan.
Magic. There you go. Like, you guys are all talking about me, and I can't say a thing.
I know. That's terrible, isn't it?
It is.
Sheridan, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks.
Sorry about the mic problem there.
That's okay. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here this morning.
We wanted to start out with the plant of the week, lilies, because I'm seeing so many in bloom. I've been taking pictures of my lilies. People say, your yard looks so great, but I just show the pictures of the parts of my yard that do look great. And right now, the lilies are in full bloom, and they're just really beautiful.
They're gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And it's a really kind of fun way to get a summer blooming plant that has a really big impact into your yard.
Yeah, there's... Right now, you can go to the garden centers and they will have lilies available that are in bloom. The best time to actually get them is before that. And so you go and do your research on your perennials, and when they're not in bloom, plant them because they will establish a little more quickly. But there's still plenty of time in the season that if you purchase them now that you can get them in, they'll root out and be just fine.
There are so many different varieties.
So many
of lilies.
So many different kinds. And this is, you know, I had to do kind of a deep dive. Ton sent me a little blurb about it. And then I was like, okay, I didn't realize how many kinds there were. And so I had to do this little deep dive with, you know, the Oriental types and the Asiatic types and, you know, and then comparing that to, you know, the daylilies that we see in our yard, you know, typically, and seeing what the difference was. And, you know, it's just so many different types.
Yeah. So, I mean, the one that we're usually planting are the Asiatic lilies. And so they're going to be the reason we grow them is they have the lily flower, but they stay shorter and they don't flop over as much, although they can get quite leggy, especially when they're over-fertilized and over-watered. But the lilies that you see in floral shops and you go into Walmart because, like, oh, I made my wife mad, I've got to bring home flowers, those kinds of lilies are the ones that are called the Oriental, and they're very fragrant. And you can grow them in the yard, but they get very tall. What did you say earlier? 7 feet on some of them?
Yeah, there are hybrids that can be, they're called tree lilies. Hmm. And they can be 6 to 7 feet tall. I told Ton earlier, I said, I have a hard time believing in Utah that they would get that tall because, you know, our climate is kind of tough. But, I mean, you could expect a very tall lily compared to what we normally see in our gardens.
I've never seen a lily that's 7 feet tall, so.
Yeah,
there's been a few, I mean, old time, you'd see old homesteads, you know, these 100, 120-year-old homes, but I've seen a few old-fashioned lilies that got 4 or 5 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they were falling over, and so they would definitely need to be staked. But modern garden center Asiastic or, you know, the group hybrid lilies that you find are generally going to be shorter, 2 to 3 feet, require less staking, and bloom longer than the old-fashioned ones that you would see, say, at grandma's house.
So what's the difference between the daylilies and the other lilies? I mean, I know the other lilies we plant from a bulb are the daylilies. I mean, I've planted a bunch of plants of daylilies, but not really bulbs.
Right. So this was my question last night because I got looking at this and I was like, wait a minute, where do these all fit in together? So the daylilies are not true lilies. They don't come from a bulb. And so they are, you know, completely different genus. When you get kind of into that nerdy genus and species thing, completely different genus, you know, and kind of spread. Is it more of a rhizome or a tuber, Tom?
Yeah, it depends. Rhizomes usually, they spread more like almost a perennial instead of by bulbs.
Right. Yeah. So very, very different where that, you know, traditional lily that we're kind of talking about today, these Asiatic, these Oriental type lilies, you know, it's like a bulb, kind of like a tulip, like you would plant in the fall. But these ones can be spring planted to bloom in the summer. So different. They kind of have that same trumpet type look to them. And then the Asiatics and the Orientals are going to have a much bigger bloom than the daylilies and a little more, I would say, fluffy, you know, just fancy.
They're fancier. They have a little bit more. They're more Hollywood, I guess, is the best way I can put it.
That's a good description.
The daylilies are something you might find in a cottage garden. They're just, you plant them and water them and walk away. And the modern Asiastics and all these other lilies that we're talking about, you can do that. But to where I think the daylilies are awfully pretty, the Asiastic and Oriental lilies are just a little, the beauty of the flowers and how fancy they are is just a little bit above common daylily.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will find in the spring, you can buy daylily, quote unquote, bulbs. You know, they might be little starts or something. You can find them as a perennial, and you can also sometimes find them in the fall. And so I think their availability is good. You know, on these, they're less common than daylilies, but when you see them, you immediately know that, oh, that is going to be a lily. They grow taller, more narrow, and the flowers look similar, but they're easy enough to tell apart.
So talk about the spread for just a second. So do the regular lilies spread like the daylilies then?
No.
No, I would say that they stay more clumped.
They take a lot longer to like actually out. Multiply,
yeah, they,
right?
They spread through bulbs, so they'll get little bulblets, daughter bulbs on the sides. And so you can get a clump of them, but they are slower spreading. You know, I always recommend Stella de Oro daylily because it doesn't send out rhizomes like a lot of other daylilies. But daylilies can get, you know, some of the bigger ones, 3 or 4 feet wide. And for Asiastic or Oriental lilies to do that would take 20, 30, 40 years to spread that much. And they'd be individual plants just in growing in a clump.
Right. And one publication that I was reading last night said that if you're going to plant these beautiful daylilies, that you should, or not daylilies, but lilies, you should plant at least five of the bulbs together, because you don't get that spreading kind of really large area that will fill in so quickly. So they were suggesting to plant in clumps so you could have that effect.
Almost
right
like you would tulips.
Yes. Yes.
So you mentioned climate and how it's unlikely we would see kind of the 7 foot tall ones. How do lilies do in our climate?
I think they do well.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, a lot of them, there are a lot of them that are bred and hybridized in California, which kind of has a similar climate. Mm-hmm. You know, they can be hot and dry like how we are here. And so they would do well. And we would have, you know, less disease problems and things like that with them. The thing that I can see kind of being an issue with them is, you know, we are really drought prone and very dry, and you know that may impact the height a little bit, and you know maybe the bloom quality just a little bit. But still, when I see them out in the gardens, they're absolutely beautiful still here in Utah.
My son's puppy is the only problem I've had digging up the bulb.
Right,
but and they must like be able to smell the bulbs, or
they can. And I was reading last night that there are, you know, like things like deer are very attracted to the bulbs. So there must be some kind of smell there that they can smell and dig and pull them up out of the ground.
I do know that with tulips, the deer love tulips.
Yes.
And a lot of tulips in my front yard, the deer, even though we don't live that close to the mountain, we still get a group of deer that come down near our home, and they have pretty much eaten most of the tulips in the front yard. So
yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I've heard of them actually like digging up the bulbs, the deer will.
Oh, yeah.
Like with their front, you know, hooves or whatever.
They're nicer than the squirrels, who not only dig up the bulbs, but leave behind the mess, like all of the husk from the bulb, which I think is really rude.
Really rude little squirrels that we have.
Yeah. One other thing about the lilies is that they can be used as cut flowers.
Absolutely.
Or day lilies. They call them a day lily because they fade within a day, but they just produce a lot of blossoms, to where lilies, Asiatics and the Oriental lilies can be used as cut flowers, and they'll last if they're picked fresh and immediately put into water for, what, 10 days, two weeks?
They have a very long vase life, so you could utilize those. If you were trying to do cut flowers for yourself or to sell, you could definitely utilize those as a focal flower in an arrangement. They'd be absolutely beautiful. And plus, the Oriental ones have an incredible smell and aroma, so you could, you know, not only utilize it for the visual appearance, but also for that smell factor as well.
Okay, before we break and take callers' questions, I have to ask, though, the elephant in the room is water.
Water.
How much water do lilies need?
I mean, they're going to need some. These are plants that are a little bit larger, so there's definitely going to be some need for water. I don't know that they would be considered a very drought-tolerant plant. Ton, do you?
I have seen them growing in areas where they get maybe 6 hours of sunlight with ground with like bark mulch or just general detritus from being left alone for a long time, and they probably get watered once a week deeply, and they're perfectly happy.
Okay, so yeah, maybe they do really well. So
yeah, I don't think, you know, they're obviously not growing in sagebrush country,
right? Mm-hmm.
And so they will need some supplemental water, but I think once you get them established, that deep weekly watering is fine.
Do most of these do well in full sun, or?
The sun is better. They'll get leggy in the shade and not bloom as much.
Oh, okay. Good to know. All right. We put up an article on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. You can find out more there. We'd also like to hear from you this morning. You can call us. Phone lines are now open, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. You can call us this morning at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's go to our first text question of the morning. This person says they have two questions. One, how big do Rose of Sharon get?
10 to 12 feet high, 8 feet wide.
And I think it can depend on the type that you pick up as well.
There are many newer cultivars being introduced that I'm growing one called Lil' Kim, like the rapper, except for it's Rosa Sharon. but Lil' Kim stays about 4x4. There's some new Proven Winners varieties that are columnar. Mm-hmm. Some really cool Rosa Sharon coming out.
That's great.
Yeah. I only have one old one, and I don't even know what it is, but it's always beautiful.
Yeah, they do bloom beautifully, and they bloom for a long time.
I've disparaged my Rose of Sharon. It's just been there a very long time, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
The old-fashioned ones, my grandpa had some up in the Twin Falls area that he would just prune and prune and prune, and it was almost just like it made them angry. And we would go up and knock them back to 4 or 5 feet. And the next year, they'd be back up to 12. And so some of the older varieties are just super aggressive and they need room. But if they're, like I talked about this Lil' Kim, it's got some sister plants from the same breeding program out of Korea that will have purple flowers and just different flower styles. And so if you can find, I think Proven Winners has bought the rights to a lot of these, but if you can find these newer Rose of Sharon plants, they will fit beautifully into the modern, smaller landscape.
Okay, their next question is, they have a sprinkler hose which has a hole every foot in it, 50 feet long. Would this work to water trees?
Oh, this is the question. And we've actually been working on drip irrigation fact sheets and trying to calculate all mm-hmm. of it. It gets incredibly complicated. And I think Ton and JD and I have all three been very frustrated over
ready
the last
to rip
month.
Our hair out
because it's hard to figure out how much water the trees
well,
get
it is. With trees, irrigation's dynamic. It's not a static thing. Mm-hmm. So the first year you might be fine with one or two just drip emitters mm-hmm. or bubblers, but what do you do as those roots grow out? And so I've seen a lot of landscapes after 2 or 3 years, all the trees fail, especially in industrial parks and at office buildings, because nobody is watching the irrigation and they're not paid to switch it out. And so your trees do wonderfully for 3 or 4 years and all of a sudden they start to get drought stress. And so it depends on the size of the tree, if it's new. And so if you're using drip on trees, what do you like to do, Sheridan?
You know, I like to use a product that is called inline drip. So it has the emitters already in the drip. And so I don't have to add anything. But what I do is I'll do a couple of loops of that inline drip around the tree. And then as the tree grows, it's really easy to add on another loop. You run what you want to run. I'd be interested to know what this this gentleman's
what type of tree
yeah,
like,
yeah,
is.
What type of tree? What type of emitter? How
in
much
the lawn?
It puts out?
It's kind of a moot point. Mm-hmm. But if it's not in the lawn, tree roots have a tendency to stay where the water is. They don't grow through dry soil. And so if you have like a large oak tree, then you're going to have drip, 20 or 30 feet out eventually from the trunk to support enough root area so that the tree doesn't tip over because all the irrigation is 10 feet out from the trunk.
Right. So, I mean, it's one of those questions that people ask, and the answer is always it depends because there are so many different factors. But, yes, it can work, and depending on how many gallons per hour those emitters put out, the size of the tree, all of those things, yes, it can work. Just make sure that your tree isn't drought-stressed and that it's thriving.
And know that you at least need to be watering out toward the edge of the canopy.
Yes.
As the tree grows, that's where a lot of the feeder roots are. And so under that canopy, but you need to take into context the size of the tree to do this properly.
All right. Yeah. Let's take a call from Russ, who is standing by in Heber. Good morning, Russ. How are you this morning?
Yeah, I was calling. Just not really the season, but in the spring, I'll usually try and get a pre-emergent on to hopefully knock out some crabgrass and weeds. But whenever I put it on, I follow the soil temperature, and it's usually several weeks before they turn on our irrigation water. And my lawn gets so dry and just goes really yellow. And I don't know if it – and I think the pre-emergent contributes to that, but – is that something I should wait till my irrigation water is on or just keep doing it and not worry about it?
Well, if we're not in a huge drought and you can catch rainwater or even snow, as it melts, it'll do what it's supposed to do. And the pre-emergent's not going to harm anything just sitting there until you can get irrigation to your lawn.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you.
All right, Russ. Thanks for your call this morning. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Jim, you're up next, and then Jerry. Number to text us, 57500.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.